From the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX, this is Reveal. I'm Al Letson. Last week, we saw Charlottesville erupt. Racial tensions that have plagued this country from its foundation spilled out onto the streets, leaving three people dead, including 32-year-old Heather Heyer, who police say was run over by a Unite the Right protester. Since then, President Trump has offered wildly different statements about what happened. Here's what he said on the day of the protest.
We're closely following the terrible events unfolding in Charlottesville, Virginia. We condemn in the strongest possible terms this egregious display of hatred, bigotry, and violence on many sides. On many sides.
Now, the president was criticized for that statement, which seemed to put the counter-protesters on the same plane with white supremacists. It's worth noting these white nationalists had surrounded a church the night before with torches and chanted racist slogans.
You will not replace us!
The next time President Trump spoke, he seemed to take a different tone.
Racism is evil, and those who cause violence in its name are criminals and thugs, including the KKK, neo-Nazis, white supremacists, and other hate groups that are repugnant to everything we hold dear as Americans.
But then, a day later, the president again seemed to put white supremacists and counter-protesters on equal footing. Here's a couple exchanges from that press conference.
McCain said that the alt-right is behind these attacks, and he linked that same group to those who perpetrated the attack in Charlottesville.
Well, I don't know. I can't tell you. I'm sure Senator McCain must know what he's talking about. But when you say the alt-right, define alt-right to me. You define it. Go ahead.
Well, I'm saying,
no, define it for me. Come on, let's go. Define
Senator
it.
And then Trump brought up reports that some counter-protesters responded to the white supremacists with violence.
Okay, what about the alt-left that came charging at What about the alt-left that came charging at the, as you say, the alt-right? Do they have any semblance of guilt? Let me ask you this. What about the fact they came charging, that they came charging with clubs in their hands, swinging clubs? Do they have any problem? I think they do. So, you know, as far as I'm concerned, that was a horrible, horrible day.
Mr. President, are you putting what you're calling the alt-left and white supremacists on the same moral plane?
I'm not putting anybody on a moral plane. What I'm saying is this. You had a group on one side and you had a group on the other, and they came at each other with clubs, and it was vicious, and it was horrible, and it was a horrible thing to watch. But there is another side. There was a group on this side, you can call them the left, you've just called them the left, that came violently attacking the other group. So you can say what you want, but that's the way it is.
On both sides, sir, you said there was hatred, there was violence on both sides.
Well, I do think there's blame, yes. I think there's blame on both sides. You look at both sides, I think there's blame on both sides, and I have no doubt about it, and you don't have any doubt about it either. And if you reported it accurately, you would say.
David Duke, the former imperial wizard of the Ku Klux Klan, immediately praised Trump's remarks on Twitter. The president's mixed messages about the extreme right echo what many of the people around him say. This year, I've interviewed some of Trump's key advisors, including Sebastian Gorka, the president's deputy assistant. He debated me on whether white supremacy even exists in America.
Historically, it existed. But the my issue is this. What is the utility of mentioning that today? Hang on a second. Two things. How are you helping bridge the divisions by using phrases like white supremacism? Because white supremacism is a conscious decision. It's the individual who is denying the other their civil rights. I do not see as a nation systemic persecution based on skin color.
Let me respond and then we're going to move on because I think you and I could talk about this all day.
And then there was Roger Stone, the man who takes credit for masterminding Trump's campaign. He was even more adamant.
There are no white supremacists, my friend. This is a tiny microcosm of the United States. The Ku Klux Klan today is funded by the federal government. Those are all informants.
Hold on. Let's rewind a little bit. Let's rewind. Let's both of us take a deep breath because I want to have a conversation, not an argument with you.
I can't let you just say things that aren't true. So go ahead.
You just said that there are no white supremacists.
There are virtually none. The whole notion that there's some giant constituency of white supremacists in the country is a joke.
So what message is President Trump sending to white nationalists? Will Carlos covers extremism for Reveal and started our weekly newsletter, The Hate Report. He joins me now. Hey, Will.
Hey, Al.
You just published a piece saying the Trump administration has downplayed white supremacy in America. So tell us, what do you mean by that and the impact that Trump's action or his inaction has had on the white supremacist movement?
Well, basically, Al, this comes down to three things. I mean, number one, you've got the Trump administration officials working really hard to paint terrorism in America as being something that's only Islamic-based, that has nothing, that there's no such thing as white supremacist terrorism out there. As such, they're just ignoring the dozens of instances of terrorism that are committed by radical right-wing groups like, you know, these white supremacists. The second thing is you've got Trump key figures in the Trump administration saying that basically the white supremacism isn't a problem. And thirdly, it's what Trump doesn't say. So you mentioned, I mean, he took 2 days to come out with this disavowal. And within those 2 days, a lot of people in the far right and the racist communities were kind of crowing about what a big victory Charlottesville had been. So that's a big part of it, is what he doesn't say.
So were you surprised at the scale of the protests on Saturday? I mean, and did you expect it to turn violent?
I wasn't surprised at all, Al. I mean, anybody who covers this, who's paying attention to this, is seeing the action on Twitter and on social media. I mean, a lot of people were really hyped up about this. A lot of really noted people on the far right and the far left were kind of encouraging their supporters to show up. I think the only thing that surprised me was that more people weren't hurt. I mean, you've got heavily armed groups on both sides of the political spectrum showing up to these events. I'm frankly surprised that A, it hasn't gotten this violent before, and that B, it wasn't more violent on the day.
So the protest was billed as a way to unite the right. Who showed up, and what are the main points that they're trying to make?
So basically, you're looking at groups that run the gamut from the real hardcore neo-Nazis, the sort of people who are not ashamed to wear swastikas, to walk around, you know, Sieg Heiling and doing salutes, to people on the sort of alt-right or alt-light, these people who bill themselves as conservatives who are merely kind of concerned about race politics. But generally speaking, race was the defining issue here, and it was people from the far right to the right of the political spectrum.
Can you explain this to me? Because you've been studying these guys for a while. The thing that I hear a lot is the idea that white people are under siege, or that there's a race war, that they're going to be extinct. Where does that come from?
Well, I mean, it comes from all sorts of things. I mean, it comes from people like the conspiracy mongers, the InfoWars of this world, who talk about the sort of the feminization of America and the pressure that white men are under. It also comes from the sort of philosophies of Hitler and other known fascists that are kind of never really gone away, are still simmering out there. But I mean, ultimately, this comes down to, you know, bog standard, blame it on somebody, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, it's scapegoating.
What do these white supremacists hear and see from the Trump administration that makes them feel like it's okay to come out of the shadows now?
Well, silence, which we talked about earlier, but I really think a key character was this guy, Steve Bannon, who has, of course, now just been removed from the White House. I mean, this guy was a really, really key character, because a lot of the white supremacists, a lot of the racists in the country really saw him as their inside guy. He was right there at the highest echelons of power. Now, there are still some other characters left. I mean, you still have Stephen Miller, other people that the white supremacists are fans of, but Bannon was really a central character.
So maybe you can clarify this for me. Now, I've asked Richard Spencer, the white nationalist, at least three different times, and I've never got a satisfactory answer. So as someone who's been watching these groups and seeing what they do, what's the difference between a Nazi, a Klansman, and the alt-right? It seems like they all want the exact same thing. I don't understand why we have to parse out these words.
I mean, you're asking the wrong guy if you want a clarification for that. I mean, frankly, I think there's very little difference between them. I mean, if you look, for example, at Charlottesville, and you've got people like Richard Spencer now in the days after coming out and saying, you know, we're not really racist, we're not really Nazis, we don't really believe that stuff. Look, everybody knew that what was going to happen on Saturday was being organized by and was going to be focused around the neo-Nazis and the very, very, very racist people in this country. If people like Richard Spencer and the people who support him don't want to be involved with those people, don't show up, you know, don't show up to Charlottesville on Saturday. So they could very easily have had a different rally somewhere else. I mean, there's unquestionably a connection there. Frankly, I think the difference is a semantic one, and it's in terms of how blatant these people want to get and how willing they are to stand up for what they truly believe.
Let me tell you, my friend, as a black man in America, if I see any of them, they are radicals to me. So moving on, let's talk about the counter-protesters now. The extreme ones are being called the Antifa movement. Who are these people? I mean, I've heard that phrase a lot. I'm not quite sure exactly who they are.
Well, you and a lot of people in America. I mean, I think we need to be cautious about even talking about something that is the Antifa movement. Now, I spent the last couple of months going and interviewing as many so-called Antifa as I could. And most of them will kind of look at you when you talk about Antifa and say, well, I'm anti-fascism, but I don't really regard myself as an Antifa. So I don't think this is an organized movement. I think it's more a sort of a collective term that's being used to describe anyone who's really upset at the fact that these guys are out there, you know, chanting Nazi slogans and saying these hurtful things and want to fight against what they genuinely see as kind of creeping fascism in the United States.
I have read some reports that have said that basically a lot of the alt-right or whatever you want to label them that were in Charlottesville, many of them, their identities have been revealed and they are losing their jobs. I wonder if that will put a chilling effect on these people coming out and being a part of these type of movements.
Well, interestingly, I mean, what the Antifa for what it's worth, what they do is that, you know, they'll cover up and they wear masks and they wear bandanas for partly that reason, partly because they don't want to be identified by law enforcement. But I think what you're likely to see in response to what's going on with these kind of revelations and people losing their jobs is that these alt-right guys are going to start showing up in masks too. I mean, they'd be kind of stupid not to, I guess, unless their work already knows who they are and their neighbors already know who they are. I think you're going to see more bandanas on the right as well as the left.
So these rallies are breaking out all over the country. What's your prediction for them? I mean, are we in the new normal? Will we see Charlottesville repeated all over the country?
I think it would be too much to say we're going to see Charlottesville repeated across the country for two reasons. Number one, because anytime these far-right groups get out in numbers, the local police, the federal police are going to be all over them. They're going to be right out there in force to try and, you know, do a better job, frankly, at policing it than they did in Charlottesville and in the previous rallies before that. And also, I mean, you know, frankly, our people are scared. You know, I mean, when people see all of this violence going on, yeah, I mean, some of the more hardcore people are going to keep on showing up, but I'm not sure if you're going to see the sorts of crowds still showing up. Having said that, you know, there are still going to be protests going forwards. Both of these sides are very energized, and you're still going to be seeing people showing up. I just don't know if it'll be as big as Charlottesville.
Will Carlos is a reporter with Reveal covering extremism and extremist groups in America. Thanks, Will.
Thanks, Al.
For white nationalist Richard Spencer, Charlottesville is not over.
We are going to make Charlottesville the center of the universe. We are going to come back here often. Your head's going to spin how many times we're going to be back here. We are absolutely never backing down.
Coming up, I talked to Spencer about the connection between his movement and violence. You're listening to Reveal from the Center for Investigative Reporting and PRX.